We'll hear arguments first this afternoon in number 86836, Hazelwood School District versus Kathy Kuhlmeier. Mr. Bain, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. This case comes before the court to resolve the issue of whether a school-sponsored high school newspaper produced and published by a journalism class as a part of the school-adopted curriculum under a teacher's supervision and subject to a principal's review is a public forum for the purpose of the First Amendment. During the 1982-83 school year, the Hazelwood East curriculum included two journalism classes, Journalism 1 and Journalism 2. Enrollment in Journalism 2 required the successful completion
of course, no court ever decided that question you just posed, did they?
I believe the Eighth Circuit, Your Honor.
They said it wasn't part of the curriculum.
They said it wasn't part of the curriculum.
No, but your question was whether a journalism, a news, part of a curriculum is a public
forum. The trial court found that it was a part of the curriculum and was not a public forum.
I know, but you, but.
The Eighth Circuit then found that because of the numerous ideas expounded in the paper that it was not a part of the curriculum. And I think that's really the issue that's here before the court is whether or not the school, having adopted a curricular matter in the teaching of journalism through a textbook and through a classroom setting where the teacher, according to the written curriculum, attended both the original teaching involving the textbook course, which was Journalism 1, and then in Journalism 2 continued with that same class.
Do you think just the issue of whether something is part of the curriculum or not is really a question for us?
The issue, I think, Your Honor, whether or not the matter is a public forum is a matter for you, because this then...
No, but I don't think the Eighth Circuit would held that, yes, this is part of the curriculum, but it's still a public forum.
The Eighth Circuit found...
It wasn't part of the
curriculum. There was a finding of fact on the part of the trial court, and the Eighth Circuit never really did find that it was... that the findings of the trial court were clearly erroneous. Mm-hmm. What they did find was because of the many, the diverse opinions that were allowed to be present in there, that the newspaper was, in fact, a public forum. I don't think that they really reversed any of the findings of fact.
Well, Mr. Rain, a regulation or something that at the beginning of the school year said that the publication is what? Shall be consistent with the First Amendment or something?
No. Mr. Justice, it was not that. There were, on two occasions, printed in the paper, statements not authorized by the board or anybody that was developed in the evidence, but there did appear on two occasions that the First Amendment rights of the students would not be abridged, and another, that articles appearing, one was in 1980 and one was in 1982.
Excuse me, that appeared where?
That appeared in the paper itself.
In the paper itself.
In the paper itself, but without, there was no developed evidence before the trial court how that all came about, and no one was able to find out how that ever got in the paper. But it was certainly not adopted by the Board of Education.
But it was by the, obviously it was by the teacher, the journalism class teacher, or it wouldn't have been in the paper, I take it.
Right, and again, I would respectfully suggest that the journalism course is taught by the teacher in accordance with the adopted curriculum. And the curriculum specifically stated how it would be adopted and how the story ideas and how the course would be developed.
Didn't it appear in the editorial, section of the paper?
It did.
Didn't the editorial section of the paper say that the editorials did not represent necessarily the views of the school or of the school administration?
It did that. There was a provision in the Hazelwood policies that matters could be submitted to the school newspaper by persons outside, such as letters to the editor, which could be, and as a matter of fact, it was developed. In this case, there was in the newspaper in question a letter to the editor, which was edited by the teacher of the class and put into there. But it was something that was infrequently used. Basically speaking, the Hazelwood East Spectrum was a newspaper that was produced as the result of students successfully completing a journalism course called Journalism 1. Journalism...
Mr. Bang, let me ask you one more question.
Sure.
Do you think the Eighth Circuit saw this case as kind of an estoppel case, where the school board had, in effect, told the students, you're going to have complete First Amendment rights? Or do you think they saw it as a case that it didn't make any difference what the school board said? Once you turn some students over loose on a newspaper, they've got those First Amendment rights, whether the school board wants to have it or not.
The concern that I saw in the Eighth Circuit's opinion, which was not supported by the findings of the trial court in this case, was the many and diverse articles that appeared in the paper that the Eighth Circuit seemed to find in the record were student-initiated or student-sponsored, and therefore having opened the Hazelwood East Spectrum to articles of diverse opinion, the Board of Education and the principal would then have been stopped.
Lost control
over the paper. And we submit that the record that we developed in the trial court and that the trial court found in its 21 findings of fact did not support that, nor did the Eighth Circuit, when they found that, find anything clearly erroneous in the findings of fact of the trial court. So what we have here, again, if I may respectfully continue, is a newspaper which is generated in the second semester by students who have been taught certain values in journalism, such as responsible journalism, journalistic ethics, copying, writing, story development ideas, and that sort of thing. And then these students are brought into journalism to practice that art under the supervision of that teacher. And in the practice of that art, the teacher, as the evidence in the trial court was adduced, the teacher then gave the students storylines to be developed. The students developed those storylines, and those storylines were then submitted back and forth to the teachers for as many as 4 or 5 revisions. Evidence in the trial court indicated by the respondent's own witnesses that a story, for example, in this newspaper on diabetes was not printed at all. So a student had gone through the process of developing a story on diabetes. It just wasn't printed. Students were given grades whether they printed a story in this publication or not. So they were graded not only on whether there was ultimate publication or whether their article or their effort was not published. Some students did not participate particularly in the writing of articles, but their major job was in layout, editing, and other articles. In fact, the 3 plaintiffs in this case are not the authors of the story in question, but rather were active in the production of the newspaper as layout editor, and one of the plaintiffs, I think, assisted in the design of a graph that was used in the story. In the May 13th issue of the Spectrum, it was proposed to be a 6-page newspaper. One additional fact, which I think is important in this case, is that the teacher who had taught these students in the fall and was teaching these students in the spring semester on April the 29th was granted permission by the Board of Education to leave education and go get a job, had a better offer in private industry. The Board of Education, through administration, appointed an administrative-level journalism teacher as a substitute teacher. Trial court found that this substitute teacher was a highly qualified teacher, as a matter of fact, was the administrative person to supervise journalism. And the reason they appointed such a qualified person to do that, it was at the end of the year, and 2 responsibilities remained of the Journalism 2 class. One was the production of the final 2 newspapers, one of which was the May 13th edition. The other one was the class legacy paper, which came out later, both of which, according to the testimony, were about 90% complete when teacher number 1 left and teacher number 2 came in. And the other was the production of the yearbook, a highly complex project on the part of the students, which needed to be completed. So the administration sent in a very qualified teacher. When that teacher received the articles from the students and reviewed them, he attempted to contact, so the evidence in trial court showed, he attempted to contact the principal about these stories. He had an objection to them. He was unable to do that, so he went and put them into proof and sent the proof to the principal. asked the principal his opinion about it. The principal said those stories, because they involved the subject matter that was in them, the story of the three young pregnant ladies who told how they got pregnant, whether they used birth control, the reaction of the father of the child, the reaction of their parents to the pregnancy, and other items, and the article on divorce where a freshman gave a story of why, or the recounting of why she believed her parents got divorced. Her name was involved. The principal said to to Mr. Emerson, who was then the substitute teacher, what can be done about this? Now, you recall I stated that it was a six-page newspaper. The principal thought at this time, and the trial court found, and no one has set aside this fact, the trial court found that the principal believed that Mr. Emerson, the substitute teacher, was at the printers and he needed a yes or no answer at this point. If he said yes, it would be printed. If he said no, something had to be done. Principal said, what could be done? Mr. Emerson said, we can delete page 4 and 5, make page 6 into page 4, we've got a 4-page paper. Principal said, go ahead and do that. And that's what happened. So that the articles that were deleted, that the principal had an objection to, were the articles involving the recounting of the tales of the pregnancy of three schoolgirls and the recounting of the tale of why the parents of one of the freshmen, in fact, several parents of students, but particularly one named freshman's parents, got a divorce, were deleted, and the paper was then printed and distributed to the class. In analyzing the First Amendment issues, the district court distinguished in this case between privately initiated speech, which has strict constitutional rights, and student speech in the context of a school-sponsored publication or activity that involved curricular matters.
We have not analyzed First Amendment issues in the school context in public forum terms, have we? Haven't we usually tested the First Amendment issue on by the Tinker test?
I think, Mr. Justice, that in looking at Fraser, which was decided on the same day as this, Fraser had a curricular aspect to it.
But the opinion in Fraser didn't turn, did it, on public forum analysis?
But it did not turn on the Tinker analysis either. It turned on the fact of whether or not in the role of the school in inculcating in values in students that the school officials had some interest loco parentis in the outcome, and in this case particularly, you see the principal's interest in protecting.
But didn't Fraser analyze the situation as whether or not the speech had been disrupted?
I think it analyzed it a little bit differently than that. In fact, there was no indication in Fraser that, other than a few laughs, that the speech was disruptive. And I think the court decided it on really the content and the people involved in the audience. And here, this is what the trial court did in our case, said that while that nothing in there was really that outstandingly bad, but they reckoned that the principal could understand the school audience as well as anyone else, and that some of the information in those articles might make it appear that this, because it was produced in a classroom exercise, that the school in effect had condoned the activities of these children, of these young ladies who had gotten pregnant, for example. And utmost in the principal's mind,
even if the school wouldn't appear as condoning it, the school was certainly providing the paper and the ink and the money to write the story, right? Which was not the case in Tinker.
Well, that's true.
It was their own armbands, right?
That's
brought
right.
Them from home, the school didn't provide.
Right. This was not written and carried about in the school. I think that. In looking at the story in the way it was presented in the trial court and not found to be erroneous by the Court of Appeals, was the fact that the lead in these three pregnancy stories said the names have been changed to grant these young ladies anonymity. And and the trial court found that the principal, by reading the article, felt he knew that who the children were, the young ladies were. And if that was the case, he felt that others would know who they were. And if the purpose espoused in the article was to grant them anonymity, the article failed. Now, again, we have to take this in the context of the fact that the trial court felt that when the principal had the question placed to him by the substitute teacher, that he had to make a decision. You know, and he looked at the article and he says, I know who these girls are. He said, he looked at the article about the divorce. He said, I know who this girl is. I know who her parents are. I don't think that the parents have had an opportunity to respond. The issue of fairness and balance is missing in that article. The trial court specifically commented on his finding of the credibility of the principal in that case. So when you take into consideration the fact that the trial court found that there was a protectable interest even espoused by the article, and that is that the girls should remain anonymous, and the article did not protect that, we feel that the court found that it was not a public forum, that it was adopted in a curriculum basis, and that as a curricular writing, it was subject to the court control of the principal. The Eighth Circuit really said, well, the school can only do that when the issue would subject the school to tort liability. And in this case, the Eighth Circuit felt that the only liability was for the invasion of privacy of the girls, and since the girls had given their consent, obviously their privacy could not be invaded. We differ with that somewhat, since also the article mentioned the parents of the girl, the husband of the girl, the decision whether or not to use birth control, and how the sexual activities occurred. So there were other people who were interested, but we don't think that the tort liability is really an appropriate standard. The interest that a school has in the well-being of the students far exceeds whether or not the coffers of the district are going to be damaged by the onslaught of litigation, although Judge Woolman in his dissent said the majority's decision in the Eighth Circuit put the school district between the scylla of suit by the students and the cerebus of suit by somebody else who was offended by what the students wrote. But still in all, we feel that the true test is whether or not as expressed in Fraser and similar cases, whether or not the school district has an interest in the well-being and the nurturing of the students who are there.
And you would fix the limits at that point, I take it, the limits of what the school and its principal can do. What I'm trying to find out is what your standard is.
I think it's similar to the standard that Mr. Justice, as you said in PICO, that there, while there may be some things that cannot be removed from a library, a school can make a decision whether or not those articles or books are suitable for different age groups. In this case, whether or not involving students in a public telling of their life and putting it in a semi-official publication of the school district, I think that's certainly not a hard decision for the principal to make. And certainly discussing the family life, the private lives of the family members that make up the patrons of the district, is not appropriate fare for the school newspaper. It would give an opinion to the students that there was some bridge or barb between the school and the community that really does not exist. So I submit that
Well, you'd go further than that, even, wouldn't you? I mean, you'd say the school could censor the paper if it had a lot of misspelling in it, wouldn't you?
Well, that's, of course, the Reinecke case, Judge, which the Eighth Circuit rested quite a bit on. And according to Reinecke versus Cobb County, the federal district court there found that the Tinker standard applied to school newspapers would not allow the teacher to even correct misspellings.
No, I'm asking what you would say.
I would say that defeats the issue of journalism. The one agreement, I guess, that we had in
what if the journalism professor just thought this article is in bad taste?
Well, in the scheme of things, as the journalistic courses are set up at the secondary level, the school, the teacher, has a lot of control over good taste. One of the things that was one of the things that they were to learn in journalism, one was that business of taste and the community standard. Where that is, I think that's best left decided at a local level.
You would say that good journalists have good taste, and you can teach that in a journalism class.
Well, I think you can teach not good taste, but I think you can teach an acceptable standard which does not suppress viewpoint. All right, and then allow the student and everybody else to grow as their time and maturity grows.
Mr. Bain, supposing that in this particular journalism class, the faculty and the school board said, you know, we're going to let you put out a student newspaper, but it's a little bit devoted to journalism. But one thing we want you to understand above everything else is that the faculty advisor has the absolute authority to censor anything that he, if it's a man, or she, if it's a woman, wants to. It may be arbitrary, but if you come into the class, that's what you're going to be put up with.
Well, as a matter of fact.
Now, do you think that would violate the First Amendment if the faculty advisor goes ahead and says, look, I just don't think much of this article. It doesn't suit me.
Well, Mr. Chief Justice, I think...
Can you answer the question?
I think that they could do that, yes. In fact, I think that that's what they did do when they adopted the curriculum and the curriculum guide, indicating that the teacher was, in fact, an editor and not a censor. The only objection I would have with the word that you used in your question was the word censor. Because I really believe that what a teacher does in that case is edit.
Well, it's really kind of a fine point of language, because I suppose the final editor might be viewed as a censor, too. If that person doesn't agree with what the people beneath him have done and changes it, you know, some people might call it editing, other people might call it censorship.
Well, the only distinction I have between censorship and editing is that censorship, in my opinion, is somebody who is outside the process who comes in and says, for some reason or other, you have violated whatever you have violated, and I want to stop that publication.
Editing, you're saying here the teacher was
part of the process. And defined by the curriculum to be so and encouraged to be so and found by the trial court to be active. And again, we get back into the storyline ideas coming from the teacher, the revision process coming from the teacher, the adoption, the approval of each.
Bain, that really adds up to was no First Amendment protection then in that circumstance. None for the student.
Mr. Justice, I don't believe that there never is no First Amendment.
Well, where?
I believe.
In light of what you answered.
But I believe that in assigning a classroom exercise, mm-hmm. Overriding interest of academic freedom, you know, in order to teach, there is a First Amendment right inherent in teaching. I think that was indicated in the Ewing opinion that said that somewhere there's a conflict between the academy's right to teach and the person's right to speak. In this case, the academy is the Hazelwood School District, and it is trying to demonstrate local values and journalistic standards, and while the argument could be endless, what the technique would be in resolving those, I think that's a balancing between that and absent a viewpoint. Now, again, we go back to the trial court because it was established clearly in the record that divorce, teenage pregnancy, teenage sexuality, abortion, these were articles that had been printed in the paper before. What had never been printed in the paper before was Mary Jones' abortion or Mary Susan's pregnancy or John Doe's divorce.
Mr. Baines, just may I just interrupt? I think Justice Brennan asked you if you really meant what you said in answer to Chief Justice Rehnquist's question. You said that the teacher could just have total power of censorship. That would mean he could say he could exclude all political articles that favored the Republicans and print only those that favored the Democrats. I don't think you mean that, do you?
Well, I really didn't. First of all, again, I would beg that the word censorship in the classroom be eliminated.
Get the label. Could they do that? Could you give the authority?
I would say that's not the facts that we have in this case.
I understand it's not the facts.
And that's a tough hypothetical. But let me.
Well, what's your answer to it? You gave one answer to the Chief Justice, and I wonder if that's
the answer.
The
answer is, if you can establish clearly on the part of the school a viewpoint discrimination, that would abridge fundamental First Amendment.
So then the school could not give total power to the teacher to exclude anything he wanted to. You can't have it both ways.
But, I mean, there's no evidence in this case that that's a fact.
That doesn't help us much.
You think that the principal couldn't, let's talk about viewpoint discrimination, the principal couldn't exclude an article that discussed teenage sexuality and pregnancy of some of the students and portray the whole thing in a favorable light, in effect sanctioning promiscuity by the students, but would permit an article that discussed the same topic but seemed to frown upon that kind of activity. The principal couldn't take a position on a subject like that. If he allows sexuality to be talked about, he has to allow both the pros and the cons of adolescent sex to be set forth. Is that right?
Stan, I guess the answer is if it's a reasonable in light of the circumstance, reasonable in light of the age of the people, reasonable in light of the audience that they're trying to reach.
He says we're trying to form some moral attitudes in the kids in this school. It's one of the things that the school does, and I don't want an article that condones this sort of thing.
I would think that what we have in this case is an article that says that we don't want to, if we're going to talk about it, we don't want to involve
individuals. I understand this case. I just want to know your position. Are you categorical that the principal or whoever has the last word cannot exercise that last word on the basis of some value judgments that discriminate between various positions on particular issues?
I'm saying that he can.
He can?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, if I could.
Thank you, Mr. Bain. We'll hear now from you, Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, in 1777, in Philadelphia, at the public Latin school, was the first student newspaper called the Students' Gazette that we at least have a record of today. 10 years before the Constitution, before the First Amendment was added, four authors, for the purposes of advice both foreign and domestic, for the reason the great want of a weekly newspaper, got together as students, expressing their opinions, recording who won certain political elections for the state assembly. The essence of their ability to put out a student newspaper was their right to communicate with each other, with other students, as well as with other members of the school community. It's an institution that existed before the First Amendment, and I think that the fact, and Mr. Bain didn't mention this at all, that this is a newspaper has to have some effect upon how the court looks at the issues.
Did the school pay for this newspaper you're talking about? What was
three-quarters of the way.
Pardon?
Three-quarters of the way, because it was sold. So the people who paid a quarter for it also contributed to the funds that paid for the printing.
No, but the school funded the printing and whatnot.
Three-quarters of it. In terms of dollar amounts.
Mm-hmm. What school was it?
Hazelwood East High School. There are three.
No, I'm not talking about this one. I'm talking about the one in 1776.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know this one.
Let's start all over. Yeah. I don't know. I assume.
Don't, Don't you think that makes a difference?
I assume because
don't
I
you think that makes a difference?
Issues.
What was the school? What was the school?
He sold it for a piece.
What
of
was
paper.
The name of the school in 1770?
Oh, I'm sorry, Public Latin School. That's the name of the school. It became the William Penn Charter mm-hmm. High School. He sold it for a scrap of paper. That's how valuable paper was at the time. So I'm assuming the school did not, but I don't know. One thing that he didn't mention in addition is the concept that has been recognized of local control over curriculum. And I think that an important inherent aspect to that principle is that it means ideas. Is that when you're talking about local control, you're talking about local control over ideas.
Local control, does that mean student control?
No, sir. I'm talking about the school district. The school board is elected by the people, the principal and the superintendent. I think that's an established interest that they have, which is valid.
And you think, how does that help you in this case?
Well, I think that when you balance or confront the First Amendment with that interest, that it's very dangerous because it assumes ideas and viewpoint control. So I think that that just means that we have to look at it a little more carefully.
Then if what were otherwise?
Than if you had a situation of an Army facility where the Army's interest is in security, order, and maintaining a certain discipline. We're not talking about suppression. The government's interest in that situation is not speech-related. It's not content-related. It's related to order or security or another government interest. That's a little bit separate sort of issue.
Let me ask you one other question. In your view, does this case depend on some sort of representations that were made to the students putting out the newspaper by either the faculty or the school board? Or would it be totally the same no matter what the faculty or school board had tried to establish in the way of a system?
I certainly think it does depend because they could set up a newspaper, call it that, which is mimeographed, which is used in class, which is handed out in homerooms, which they are told discuss only school issues. Be a bulletin board, and in fact, we're going to give you a weekly interview with the principal. Fine, they set the limits, that's within their power.
Well, supposing they set them a little bit differently, said this is going to be, printed the way ordinary newspapers are, it doesn't come out during class, you're going to work on it as an extracurricular activity. But here are the rules. You're going to be subject to review on your subjective topics, and take Justice Scalia's example. We want to promote morality as we see it, and so if you're touching subjects like high school sex, we will encourage and insist on one point of view rather than another.
I think they can do that, but I think that there would be trouble doing it with an extracurricular activity.
Why?
Well, because I assume extracurricular means that they're only putting in the money and you don't have a journalism instructor there.
Well, supposing there is an instructor.
Then I think it sort of falls similarly to where we do, in the middle. We're not extracurricular with Spectrum, and we're not a laboratory experience only in the class.
But what does that distinction contribute to the First Amendment argument, the difference between the curricular and extracurricular?
Access. The harm that the First Amendment is designed to prevent is that a viewpoint that the government does not like for any reason is excluded. And when you have students allowed to make certain editorial control decisions or allowed to have certain access to their expression in the written columns, then the First Amendment applies and that's protected.
Well, supposing that it said that the students are to write these pieces and we're not going to write anything ourselves, but the faculty advisor reserves the right to say no to anything that it involves is taking a position that's morally undesirable for high school students.
I think the school board, the principal and superintendent, superiors, can delegate the editorial function to an advisor, and he can exercise that in whichever way he thinks, so long as it isn't viewpoint-based. Now, if he says it's viewpoint-based, then I don't think that'd be protected.
So that the advisor cannot say, I reject this article which encourages what I think is immorality on the part of high school students, but I will accept this article which I think encourages morality.
It doesn't serve an editorial function, and it doesn't serve an educational interest. I don't think that would be constitutional.
you either have to have no school paper or you have to have a school paper that carries articles like smoking pot is fun.
I think you can have a school paper.
That's the constitutional choice.
I don't think so. I think you can allow the school to set up one that's related to their educational interests so long as they don't tell the students, now go and exercise your Tinker First Amendment rights.
I don't understand. I don't understand what you
mean. Well, I don't think it has to only be one or the other. I mean, I think the school can
set up a newspaper then and say, you're not going to have any articles in it that encourage the smoking of pot. I can do that?
If it's viewpoint based, I don't think they can, but they can.
They can. So I either have to have no newspaper or I have to have a newspaper that has articles encouraging the kids that go to that school to smoke pot.
Along with other viewpoints, yes. They have to allow that viewpoint, if that's what you're asking.
I understand your position now.
I mean, I think that the viewpoint discrimination is sort of a key to what they did in this case. And it reminds me of something you asked about, Mr. Bain. The 1977 article on pregnancy said, this is horrible. Trauma, leave scars, don't ever do this. It has nothing to do with, you know, with being a good person in school. The 1987 article says, I'm happy having this baby. And the effect, whether the principal intended it or not, was to leave out that what he perceived and which you categorized as a moral choice in some sense, to leave out that one viewpoint that one student had, which said, you know, this is okay for me today, and to only allow, because this, for, you know, some arbitrary reason, this article on pregnancy was allowed in 10 years before, to only allow the viewpoint that this is a horrible thing and don't you dare go and you know, do anything like this if you want to be a decent person.
What about teaching in the school? I presume you could try to teach the students that smoking pot is no good. Or could you? Would you have to have a teacher come up and give the other side and say, on the other hand, maybe smoking pot is good?
I don't think you can compare a newspaper with what they teach in social studies.
To enforce a point of view in the one case and not in the other?
Because student expression, as opposed to the teacher's control of content of a classroom, is a difference. The Life and Families class at Hazelwood East taught, and he was interviewed for our articles, taught one viewpoint in class with curriculum. That's curriculum. That's totally curriculum. I don't think that has anything to do with student expression. I mean, sure, you have to answer a question. You might have to write a paper. And it's conceivable that you could get some First Amendment protection down the road, but I don't think that's close.
So the only way to avoid all the good stuff you're doing in the classroom, teaching them that smoking pot is no good, is not to have a student newspaper. That's the only way you could avoid the schools formally subsidizing that opposing value judgment.
Not to pay for it. Not to have an advisor.
Right.
And not to allow the other viewpoint to be presented. To only have one viewpoint, you'd have to have no school newspaper? Yeah.
On your theory, the school couldn't even require that the students include in the newspaper the idea that smoking pot is bad.
Oh, sure. That's the viewpoints could be presented.
That isn't First Amendment law.
Did you say the school could require them to put that in?
If they're going to have a story that says smoking pot is great, you have to have a story that says smoking pot is bad.
No
what?
I don't believe that's required at all. I don't think anybody
would
say they had to have, that they'd have to put in a story. Well, the point is excluding a viewpoint.
I know, but the school says to the paper, you've put in a story that smoking pot is great. Now, you have to put in a story along with it that smoking pot is bad. Now, could they do that to the newspaper?
No, the school's not the editor.
So the students could exclusively say only that smoking pot is great. That's your theory.
If that's all the students wanted to say, and it is open to the discussion of student ideas of this level.
Unless Red Lion applies. I mean, maybe this is like the FCC. I mean, this is, after all, a school newspaper. It's their type. It's their paper and whatnot. So maybe they do have to provide viewpoints on matters of public controversy.
Well, we didn't require a newspaper to.
No. Your position is a school
political
couldn't
candidate.
Do that.
So I don't think that a school newspaper could either.
Do you think that the school newspaper can impose any journalistic standards, whatever?
Yes, through the advisor. And through accuracy. I think that even if you had to push it, the principal could reach down and say, this isn't accurate. But he has to check it out. He can't just say, I have this reasonable belief, my one person knee-jerk thought, that this is not accurate. He'd have to either go to somebody with training in journalism, or he would have to let the advisor do it, or investigate it himself and have some objective facts to allow that.
But that advisor could not say, look, if you're going to say smoking pot is good, in fairness, have a story that gives the other side. You would say the school advisor could not do that. That's what you just said a minute ago.
Yeah, my sort of knee-jerk response, I'm afraid. I don't really know the answer to that. I mean, I think it has so much to do with other things, such as the public access and things to the airwaves, things like that. I don't really know.
You don't think you could have a class in which you are teaching students journalism and teaching them how to produce a newspaper and maintain school control over all aspects of that publication, including content?
Not if the content is placed and delegated to the students or jointly to the student's advisor, and not if it is discussion or an expressive vehicle, as they admit this paper was, for student expression. I think that when you get student expression involved, then the school's control cannot be absolute.
May I ask you this question about this case? As I understand it, part of the problem arose because the person who normally exercised responsibility, Mr. Sturgos, left, and there was kind of confusion about it. Supposing he had not left, and everybody was used to working with him and recognized that he was the teacher and controlled it, and he had took plenty of time to reach the same decision that the principal reached here, told the students all about it, but had just as weak reasons as the principal did. But he came to that conclusion, this is not a very good article for the paper, you can't print it. Would you still have a case?
If he...
He ended up, after deliberating all the deliberations going into whether these articles ought to go in or not, he comes to the conclusion, these aren't very good articles for this school, I think I'll cut them. Do you have the same right to say...
Frankly, I think it's not very strong. No.
It's not.
I'd say that the advisor has the ability and the right, because of his expertise, to do some editorial function. That's been delegated by the school to him, and that's different than the principal.
So you'd say that was a different case.
Yes, sir.
So what you're really complaining about is the fact that this principal didn't use a very good judgment.
That they reached up and got someone who was not part of the editorial function, who was not skilled in journalism or experienced. And you did it for a reason other than journalistic standards or editorial
discretion. Well, say he decided, you know, journalistic standards, this article doesn't show the degree of maturity that we think it ought to show for to have the school name on it and all the rest. There's some misspelling in it and some bad grammar. A lot of mixture of reasons. That's not enough.
The advisor, that he could do that?
If the advisor can do it, I don't understand why the principal can't.
Because the advisor is part of what has been delegated by the school to be the training and practicing of student expression.
Seems to me what you're saying is if you're going to have censors, they've got to be good censors.
No, I think that they have to be journalistically involved so that the motivation of the school is good journalism and not a viewpoint.
It's a constitutional line that whether you're violating the Constitution or not depends on whether you have a good journalist involved or not in the censorship.
The constitutional line comes with whether student expression is protected or not. Once it is, then I think the scrutiny has to be very strict. I thought that we were talking about a very detailed situation where the actual censorship was done by one person at one level with a certain motivation as opposed to another. So that detail is not, to me, of constitutional limits. The censorship is.
Well, I would think you would say that the principal, not being acquainted with journalism, couldn't order this piece deleted, even if it had defamatory matters in it.
I don't believe that either. I think that's because of Tinker. I don't think that has so much of a policy aspect, except that the school's educational interest.
Here's this principal who really isn't the advisor, and he's telling them to take it out.
I think he could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm hoping that that is not a practical situation.
And so he couldn't say, well, I think this article ought to be taken out because it involves some parents who really ought to have a chance to say their piece before anything is published like that.
That's
he couldn't
correct.
Say that.
No.
Doesn't any newspaper have somebody who makes a judgment as to whether what's published in the newspaper will offend the community? I assume any newspaper doesn't try to publish stuff that is offensive.
Sure.
Well, now, who does that when you have a school newspaper? Suppose the principal says, here's an article that's on premarital sex. It's an interesting article, but this is a very conservative, rural community. Our people will find this offensive. If I were running the local newspaper, I wouldn't run a piece like this. Now, what if he makes that judgment? And if he can't make it, who makes it in the school then? You're telling me you have school newspapers that cannot exercise any judgment as to what offends people?
When the government is the publisher, I don't think we can equate it to one person with the same rights as the private press. I don't have a very good answer for that difficult question. I do think that the students have to be involved in that if it's their expression.
Once again, you leave us with a terrible choice, either no newspapers at all or newspapers that have to be offensive, as no private newspapers need be.
Right. Well, why would a student newspaper need to be either? I mean, I think that they...
Because nobody can stop them.
Can't we?
You have to get very responsible adolescents who have very good judgment as to what's offensive to the whole community or not, and care.
I think private newspapers print offensive things all the time to some, portions of the population, and I don't
think...
Well, you have this advisor, this instruction, supposedly monitoring it a little. I mean, there may be some restraint because you have a teacher, you have an advisor, you have a curriculum developed to try and learn how to do it according to ethical and journalistic standards that are better than the private. I mean, the private aimed for that also, but you have a little bit more control because you have an advisor there who hopefully has some background in journalism, some experience perhaps as a reporter.
You'll let him do it?
Yes, I think he could.
He could exclude it because I think this will offend the community.
As long as it isn't only because of a viewpoint discrimination, yes.
Well, but it is. I mean, he thinks his viewpoint will offend the community.
It seems to me that offending the community wouldn't have...
If students want to print something, Hitler was right. And the advisor says, gee, this...
I think
the community will not like that piece.
I think the advisor...
And there's a school bond issue coming up, he thinks. And there's just no solution for that problem.
Well, I think the advisor can exercise editorial control.
But not the principal.
Not viewpoint. Well, to say that he can't, what I'm saying is that it requires strict scrutiny if he does.
Well...
And it still may. There may be a compelling state interest. That's fine. It may be defamatory. Then he can't constitutionally.
Well, so could the principal then.
Yes. If it's defamatory, libel, obscenity, and disrupting school, and invading the rights of others.
What about if it's a...
I'm puzzled by the fact that the First Amendment implication seemed to turn on how far up in the educational hierarchy the decision is made. What if you had a small rural school where you don't have a whole lot of people, you don't have any journalism advisor, the principal says, I'll fill in as journalism advisor?
Well, I think that in attempting to analogize to the private press, which has a reporter, an editor, a publisher, and an owner, that we've gotten a little bit away from the First Amendment application. Now, it's not that is irrelevant, okay? There is something that I think needs to be addressed there. But the main thing is this protected speech or not, and what's the standard? And I don't think that who makes the decision necessarily determines that. I think the type of speech we're talking about in a newspaper,
I must say I didn't get that impression of your case from the answers you've given to the questions. I got the impression that you thought it was very important who made the decisions, whether it was the faculty advisor or the principal.
Well, I don't think it's as important as where the decision is made, the manner. We're talking about a newspaper, the content of it, the basis for the decision. There's no question that it's a very difficult position for the advisor to be in. And the principal is far removed from the journalism education going on in that classroom. I don't know if that really has any constitutional importance other than situations where you'd have to apply the First Amendment to high schools very so much. You know, that you might have the local newspaper in Carroll, Iowa, publishes every Thursday that high school's newspaper. The private publisher says here to the students, here's your one page, publish it. You've got a school with a high educational quality in Hazelwood that says every 3 weeks we're going to have 6 or 8 pages and we want you to, you know, do all this journalism, aim for learning all these journalism things, editorials, news, columns, letters to the editor, everything. And then you have a place that prints its own in the basement of the school, and it's going to be a mimeograph sheet 8x11, and they're going to hand it out, you know, to the people in the classroom. I mean, there's just such a variety that it's true that many people in the situations that the student press has to, you know, it encompasses, make those decisions. I think that you can look at the issues without being stuck into one of those who's the censor.
Giving your different examples, is it of any significance in this case that the school had no objection to the distribution of Xerox copies of the material that was included from the newspaper itself? They just didn't want to associate the school officially with the material.
That did not happen.
Oh, didn't it? I misunderstood.
It's in finding of fact number 21 from the district court. It's in a footnote at the Eighth Circuit. There is nothing in the transcript. The articles were never. There's no reference. I don't know where it came from. It's absolutely without any basis. They were never distributed. I probably said it.
Oh, you were there.
No. So I can't answer your question because it didn't happen unless you'd like.
Well, I certainly don't question your representation, but when we got a finding of fact on something, I tend to treat that as part of the record unless somebody demonstrates, I mean, it's clearly erroneous.
I don't think it makes a difference, but that's just my...
Ms. Edwards, if I recall your response, you said that it would be okay if the school said, this is a house organ. We're not going to allow everything to be published. We're going to have the last word. That would be okay. Now, suppose it didn't say that. At the beginning, it said it's going to be a wide-open paper. But then it begins behaving otherwise, and it starts excluding material when the school was exercising its own judgment that the material is not very good. That would violate the First Amendment then, right?
Yes.
Why should that be? I mean, it's sort of a violation of the First Amendment that depends on breach of contract or estoppel or what? The school, in the middle of the school year, said, yeah, we said at the beginning of the year it was going to be wide open, but we've changed our mind. From now on, what comes in is only what we say comes in. Would that be okay if they change their mind in the middle of the year?
Assuming that, well, I might qualify my answer earlier. If it were communicated to the students in some manner that they now knew that this was the new way to operate, then it might be all right. What happens, I thought you were asking about...
This was done too informally, so this, yes. First Amendment violation consists exclusively of the fact that the principal didn't publish a regulation or something to change whatever course there was, and that's the First Amendment violation.
No,
frail protection if that's all we're talking about.
Well, I don't think that whether they write a regulation or not depends upon whether the First Amendment applies, but I do think that the school can limit how they run their journalism program and their newspaper as they, you know, put it out.
Well, the principal limited it.
He didn't limit the program. He didn't limit the newspaper. He limited one idea.
I see.
Now, I think he can limit the whole thing. And maybe, you know, people might disagree.
It's the ad hoc nature of it that you're objecting to here.
Well, there is some distinction between practice and policy, I think. And so I didn't know if you were asking about that. You may have a practice that's different than a policy, and I think that you'd have to go by the practice as opposed to what they wrote down.
I wonder if you're saying that your students had a First Amendment right to have a teacher just as good as Mr. Sturgis.
I suspect that things would have been different had we not had this change.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Mr. Bain, you have 3 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. In answer to Justice White's question on... In our petition for writ, we have included the decision of the Eighth Circuit, and on page A9, it says, although, as the district court noted, the spectrum was produced by members of the Journalism 2 class, its staff was essentially restricted to students of the class in the spectrum was a part of the school-adopted curriculum. We would submit that the curriculum that was adopted by the Hazelwood School District was adopted, as the respondent's own witness said, in the best fashion for the teaching of journalism in a secondary level, and that is under the supervision of a classroom teacher as opposed to an extracurricular. That the curriculum was a very well thought out, well set out, correlated with textbook and classroom instruction, and therefore it was a curricular matter and subject to the supervision of the principal.
But the court said it was something more to him.
Because they added, you're correct there, they added that that it was something more because of the diverse number of ideas, which I feel is a finding of clearly erroneous without saying clearly erroneous. I think if the Eighth Circuit wanted to say that the district court's finding that it was a curricular matter was erroneous, they should have said it.
Isn't there also some other inconsistency? Isn't there a footnote in the Court of Appeals opinion that says that there was no active involvement by the instructor in the production?
We noted that in our report.
And a flat finding by the district court that there was active involvement by the instructor.
If you read the 21 findings of fact, there's a lot of activity.
Yeah. Where did the Court of Appeals get that from?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think that that that's what they found. I think they found facts. They read the evidence, they read the record, and they read it differently than the trial court did. But without going to a Rule 52, clearly erroneous. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bain. The case is submitted. We'll hear argument next.